if it's not propped up in orbit, eventually it will decay, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why, you know, every flight that ever went up there, if they had extra fuel, shuttle always had extra fuel. They would push it faster, you know, ignite their engines, and they call them OMS engines, OMS engines, two big engines that they used on the back of the shuttle, and they could ignite that, and then they could, you know, they were able to relight those things a number of times, so that would push the space station much faster. But, you know, even with a space shuttle, you were only able to get it up another, 14 miles. To break orbit, you know, you have to go up, you know, not so much up, but the speed to do that would have to be increased. You know, they would increase the speed with the shuttle from, say, 17,500 miles an hour to maybe 17,600 miles an hour, you know, temporarily. You know, maybe they got 100 miles, you know, faster, but that was enough to get them up 14 miles, you know. You know, a big difference between that and trying to leave orbit and go, you know, instead of increasing the speed, you know, 100 miles an hour, you got to get the thing moving 7,000 miles per hour faster than where it is now. Back to you.
So there's still residual atmosphere that's slowing it down.
Oh, all the time, yeah. There's molecules at 250 miles up, and, you know, this is a big surface area hitting these little molecules. You know, I mean, the vacuum in space at that location is probably more of a vacuum than you would have in a vacuum tube in our radio. But there's still little molecules up there. And, you know, those things are hitting the space station. As the space station goes around, eventually slowing it down little by little. And then with the big solar panels that they have, you know, those things are, 250 feet long and 40 feet wide, and you have six sets of them. You know, if they're going, you know, head on into the forward direction, you know, you're getting more resistance. You're actually slowing the space station down a little quicker. Sometimes, if they know they have plenty, you know, let's say they get a warning that, you know, something's coming near the space station. One of the ways they could change their speed is by moving the solar panels, you know, actually face in where it's hitting it face on. And then you could slow the space station down for just a little bit, just so that, you know, whatever space junk is coming near the ISS won't hit. Or they could say, well, turn it edge on. This way, we'll make sure we're not going to hit too many molecules as we go, and we'll be able to, not slow down at all. We'll be able to keep our speed with the way it is now, and we won't hit this flying piece of debris that might be floating through space. So that's one way they do it. That, you know, it's actually free. All they do is just, you know, point the solar panels in the right direction. But, you know, of course, you know, if it's something that has to be done immediately, we don't have that kind of time, then they do ignite the engines on the space station to move that a little bit, and that's pretty much it. But the physics behind it is, you know, moving up a gigantic mass at a tremendous speed, takes a tremendous amount of energy to do that, Brian.
Understand, this is KF2CC. What confuses me is that you have all these other satellites orbiting the Earth, including geostationary satellites. Now, are they eventually going to be coming down or not?
No, it's more rarefied the higher you go. You know, you start getting up, you know, 1,000 miles, 2,000 miles up, and those things aren't coming back. You know, maybe for hundreds of years. Ones in geosynchronous, probably, you know, tens of thousands of years. They're just not going to come back. They're at 23,000 miles above the Earth. You know, space station's only 250 miles above the Earth. So the higher you go, like where the GPS satellites are, they're at 11,000 miles above the Earth, so probably half the distance between us and the geosynchronous satellites. The geosynchronous, they don't even put rockets on there to try to slow it down, to try to deorbit, because the rocket would have to be pretty gigantic to do that. So what they do when the satellites fail, and they know it's about to fail, they'll put those geosynchronous satellites, they'll actually use what little thrusters they have to push them a little further out, you know, maybe 10, 20 miles out past where they are, if they can, and they call that the graveyard. That's the geosynchronous graveyard. There's a bunch of satellites out there that are no longer functioning, their batteries have failed, and they're never coming back. You know, not now, not ever, not in our lifetime, or our great, 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 great kids' lifetime. You know, 1,000 years from now. Back to you, Bob.
Oh, got it. Some interesting information. Thank you very much. So here's the whole thing. Why don't they just boost up the space station to maybe 500 miles, and they don't have to deal with it for a long time?
Yeah, apparently even that, just to get up that height, like I said, with the space shuttle, with all that power, they got maybe 14 miles. So, okay, keep sending the space shuttle up, dock, ignite the engines, another space shuttle, dock, another one. And, you know, how many years would it take to, how many space shuttles, $500 million would that take to get up 500 miles? No, I don't think so. You know, it's interesting that you would like to see a space station there. They plan on putting the Gateway space station into orbit around the moon. Gateway is going to be consisted of maybe four or five modules. Space station has like 20 modules with all kinds of infrastructure. They plan on over time getting one module, two modules, three, and maybe eventually at the most four or five modules for the Gateway space station around the moon. So to do that, you know, you'll launch an ISS with one module, you know, and maybe a crew, and then the next year another module, maybe another crew, maybe eventually, you know, 2033 or something like that, you'll have, you know, a complete space station. In the beginning, you're going to have they call the habitat module and the PPE, power propulsion element. That will go up now. That will dock with the habitat module. And then that's going to be called Gateway. And then maybe in the future they might send two more. There's one planned by European Space Agency and another one by Japan. So, I mean, even at that, that would be good, you know. With the space station, you just can't do that. And even those modules, the diameter is going to be smaller than... It's going to be like 12 feet diameter. For a space station, all those modules are 14 feet diameter. You know, everything's math. Anyway, back to you, Brian.
I thought they had devised a booster module that fits under the ISS to automatically boost it.
ISS, where you have the main core, four engines. Those engines are the ones that they use for the space shuttle. They're called RS-25 engines, and they run on liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen. Then you have the two big booster engines, rocket engines that are attached to it, one on the port side, one on the starboard side, and each one of those will be putting out 3.5 million pounds of thrust. So you have one on the left 3.5, one on the right 3.5, and those four engines I mentioned before that used to be space shuttle engines, by the way, space shuttle had three, now this thing has four, each one is equivalent to 500,000 pounds of thrust, so you know, you got 2 million there, so you, by the time you're done, you've got like eight and a half million pounds of thrust launching this thing up to orbit. Two big boosters separate, similar to what they did when on the shuttle, and that leaves the core. The core keeps going for another, after 8 or 9 minutes, that thing separates, and that leaves the next stage, and that's another liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen rocket that's going to deliver around 25,000 pounds of thrust. They have an advanced one planned, take four of those 25,000 pound ones, it's going to add up to almost 100, around 90,000 pounds of thrust for this second stage. And that will be able to, when that's developed, they'll be able to launch a crew and at least one module to the moon. So that's what they're up to. I'm looking at the time. Supposed to shut down here. Can't believe it's 10 after already. Anyway, over to you, Brian. Great questions. This is WS2N.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much for answering all my questions. I'm done. I'm done. So whenever you want to go ahead and we want to go QRT, I'm ready.
Yeah, Brian, in the old days, we used to go up till 12 o'clock and beyond. You know, repeat used to stay active. And, we'd have, like, Dick talking to people at, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. Not me. I used to go, that's when I was going to work. I'm retired, so. But, there you go. Very good. I'm going to turn it back over to Roy. Tomorrow night, we'll be on for the Limar info. Net, Club InfoNet, and then that's always followed by Swap and Shop, and then that's always followed by Amateur Radio Newsline. So thanks for everybody listening here, and we'll be here hopefully next week, and we'll talk about the lander. I would definitely want to see that thing land on the moon, or no, I won't see it because it's going to be in the middle of the night. I just wanted to make sure that thing makes it, made by the Firefly Company. Firefly Aerospace is the name of the company. That's their Wikipedia, and you get all kinds of information on their rockets and on the Blue Ghost that's on the way to the moon. Roy, over to you. AC2GS, WS2N. For the SpaceNet report, TechNet.
This is AC2GS. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all that you do for the technical net and all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it. I appreciate it. And I appreciate everyone who participated tonight. I hope you had a fun time. Hope you'll join us next Sunday. Our revels now are done here. I just want to remind you a couple of quotes from Dick, K2RW. He always advised people at the end of the TechNet to be kind to each other. That's always good advice. And, of course, good old Epictetus. It's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So try and keep your mind open to new ideas, but not so wide open that your brain falls out, because that's been known to happen lately. Anyway, have a great week. Stay safe. Stay warm. Stay dry. Be well. And please, if you can, come back next Sunday at 8 p.m. when we do this all over again. This is AC2GS closing this episode of the Limewalk Technical Net, and I will be clear after I say, Slava Ukraini.
very much, everyone. As usual, excellently done and much appreciated. This is Brian, KFTUZZ. I'm clear.